Produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George, Health First is available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
We are back with Dr. Jacob Appel, and we've been talking about ethical issues around medical living and dying. We were talking about the healthcare proxy and having somebody who could know exactly how you want end of life to go and how far to go so that they would know what you need. Do you often find that that's the same as the executor of the will?
So it varies from place to place. Usually people want the same person making all of their decisions, but there may be reasons that they don't. One issue that comes up is occasionally people will not want the people closest to them to know specific things about their health care. So, for example, one may be HIV positive or have AIDS and not want one's loved ones to know. And there are ways of setting up documents and decision makers to keep that information from your loved ones, but it takes a lot of effort. Usually people who don't want that shared know that in advance and go out of the way to make that happen.
Yeah, that would make good sense. Let's go to the other end of the spectrum. What are some of the things that are coming up around birth and conception? Can you tell us a little bit medically about what's going on, like how many different ways there are to have children now, and what ethical questions does that bring up?
Sure. We are at the brink, or actually in the midst of a revolution in reproductive technology. So the kinds of issues that come up are, up until very recently, the oldest age that someone could have a child as a woman was 59, which is the record in Great Britain. But now women in their 70s, through in vitro fertilization and alternative reproductive technologies, can have children, which, not to sound sexist, but men have been doing this for a long time. So it's simply leveling the playing field in some way, but it raises complex conceptual questions about how old it is, if ever, to be a parent. And then there are people who want children that are designed in certain ways or want to select embryos in certain ways. So one example that very frequently comes to the fore is there's a British couple who are deaf, and they're deeply invested in deaf culture, and they had a deaf daughter, and they went to the fertility board in Britain and sought to have a second deaf daughter through in vitro fertilization by choosing certain embryos and not others. And the British Fertility Board said, you can't do that. Deafness is a disability. We don't want to encourage it. But that's not so clear cut to many people.
Mm-hmm. That's wow. And so with I'm taking you back to that 70-year-old woman, how can a 70-year-old woman have a baby?
You can create an embryo in vitro in a dish, and you can implant it, and she can carry it to term. That's only the tip of the iceberg. More complex are three-parent babies, where some of your audience members may remember from high school biology that the DNA in cells is contained mostly in the nucleus, but also in mitochondria. And you can take the mitochondria from one cell and the nucleus from a different cell and fuse them and then fertilize them in a patient or a child who has two biological mothers in addition to a biological father. If you take that embryo and then implant it in a third woman, they can actually have three biological mothers and one father.
And the legalities and ethics around there, as people are doing that, are the legal papers drawn up right then and there to show who would be the legal parent?
Sometimes, and sometimes they aren't, and it varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. You might be someone's parent in one state and not another, or one country and not another. It is quite a complex web we are weaving, often without thinking about it very much in advance. I'm always mentioned that children's book where the question is, are you my mommy? And we just don't know sometimes.
And where is this all going to take us? Like, you've been involved in this a long time. You've seen a lot of things change. How far can it go?
We really don't know what the upper limits or the boundaries are in a lot of these fields. We don't know what the dangers are, what the risks are. We are very much both in Brave New World and in acting blindly. And so I'm not one of those people who says we should put the brakes on these efforts. What I do think is we need a collective societal effort to think about these questions much more deeply. And one of the goals in my book is to get ordinary people to really engage in this process.
Okay. But science costs a lot of money. Medical experiments or medical procedures like this cost a huge amount. That ethically only allows very, very wealthy people to have these situations happen for them. Is that another ethical problem?
Well, one of the questions is whether or not these advances are going to favor the wealthy, or whether or not, if used properly, they could be the great equalizer. So what I tell people is there are two ways of becoming doing very well in your SAT score. One way is we can get you an SAT tutor, or the other way is we can use some kind of genetic engineering to make you naturally smarter. And people instantly are taken aback and say, but that sounds unjust, it will favor the rich. On the whole, people who are less well off have a much harder time hiring SAT tutors and tennis coaches and all the other sorts of things that that the rich take for granted. So maybe if we provided these sorts of services to everyone, we would actually equalize society more. It's an open-ended question.
Mm-hmm. And what do you do with people who come in and they're healthy, they're normal, but they want to be super powered or super healthy or have things go so much far forward, like, say, mentally, intellectually, physically? Who pays for that? Where does it lie?
We don't have any answer to that yet. What I tell people is it doesn't matter what rules we make here in the United States, because we live in a global world, and someone else will always offer the service in Thailand or Mexico or some developing nation. So we really need to strive for some kind of meaningful national consensus, international consensus.
Mm-hmm. And is it possible for a child with three or more parents to develop a DNA problem that none of the parents had?
In theory, we really don't know the implications of multiple interactions of various DNA, various alleles. What I can say is the area where this is most used now in the place where it is actually in children or fetuses who otherwise would develop rare genetic disorders. So it can be a treatment. We can take nuclei from women whose mitochondria carries rare diseases and give them different mitochondria. And in that way, it's actually a very beneficial thing. The question is, where are the limits and what are the consequences? And we just don't know.
Wow. People often ask about stem cell transplants and where the stem cells come from and how they are implanted. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
And I should say that I am not a transplant surgeon. I'm not a stem cell expert.
Okay.
The complex details are outside my purview.
Okay.
What I can say is that the whole concept of stem cells raises all sorts of very complex ethical questions. And in the same way, cloning raises all sorts of complex ethical questions. And transplantation more basically does. At what point does taking cells from another person incorporate them into you in some way? If any cell in your body can become a human being, if we manipulate it the right way, do we have any obligation to protect all of your cells? Obviously, that becomes absurd at some point, but the boundaries are entirely unclear.
So do we need to take care of the donor? Is that what you mean?
So let's take a very simple example. So people are very concerned about human cloning.
Right.
I am less concerned about the biological implications of human cloning than I am about the legal implications. If you create a clone from a somatic cell, is that creation your sibling? Is it your child? Do you have any obligation to care for it in the way you would a child of your own? If you need a kidney transplant or a stem cell transplant, does that clone have any obligation to give back to you? We have not answered any of these questions in law or ethics.
Mm-hmm. So it's a continued debate on and on and on.
Absolutely.
Wow. This book brings up so much more. There's so many little quips and very short chapters. And the fun thing about your book, Jacob, is that it's a good read for anyone. There's a lot of deep thought gone into it, but it's very compelling and provocative. And I think anybody could pick it up and just really enjoy the way you've written it.
I appreciate that. It's not a book for experts. It's a book for ordinary people who simply are interested in challenging discussions. And I tell people, if nothing else, it's a great way to argue with your spouse.
That's great. Are there any new books on the horizon?
I'm always scribbling away. Most of what I do is in fiction. So I write a lot of books that are novels or short stories that deal with bioethical issues. So my next collection of short stories will be coming out next year.
Fantastic. Have you got a name for it?
Yes, it's going to be called Winter Honeymoon.
We will be looking forward to seeing it. Can we get your contact info and find a place where people can buy this book, Who Says You're Dead?
Sure. So my website is www.jacobmappel.com. That has all my contact info on it. And they can buy the books at most local bookstores and at Amazon. and easy to find.
Excellent. Thanks so much for calling in and being on the Health First show today, Jacob.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Okay. We'd also like to thank Alan Wishart. He's the producer on the board. And we'd like to thank all the community stations across Canada that carry our show. Have a healthy and happy day.